नाम नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय। नाम नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय।
श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 5 नारदस टीचिंग्स टू वसुदेव। This is text number 3. This is one of the verses from Prabhupada's repertoire, and quoted in many other places as well. Word meanings, Yah, one who, Esham, of them, Purusham, the Supreme Lord, Sakshat, directly, Atma Prabhavam, the source of their own creation, Ishvaram, the Supreme Controller, Na, do not, Pajanti, worship, Avajananti, disrespect, Stanat, from their position, Brashtaha, fallen, Patanti, they fall, Adaha, down. Yaesham Purusham Chakshat, Atma Prabhavam Ishwaram, Na Bhajantya Vajananti, Stanad Vrashtha Patantyada, Yaesham Purusham Sakshat, Atmana Prabhavam Ishwaram, Na Bhajantya Vajananti, Sthanad Vrashtha Patantyada, Yaesham Purusham Sakshat, Atmana Prabhavam Ishwaram, Na bhajantya vajananti, sthanad brashtha patantyada. Yaesham purusham sakshat, atma prabhavam ishwaram, Na bhajantya vajananti, sthana brashtha patantyada. Yaesham purusham sakshat, atma prabhavam ishwaram, Na bhajantya vajananti, Yaesham Purusham Sakshat, Atma Prabhavam Ishwaram, Na Bhajantya Vajananti, Sthana Brashtha Patantyada. Ladies. Yaesham Purusham Sakshat, Atma Prabhavam Ishwaram, Na Bhajantya Vajananti, Sthana Brashtha Patantyada. Yaesham Purusham Sakshat, Atma Prabhavam Ishwaram, Na bhajanti bhajananti stana brishtha patantyada. Before I read the translation, I want to give the context here. This is the third verse of the chapter. From the first verse, the king asks about, kindly explain to me the destination of those who for the most part never worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who are unable to quench their material desires and who are not in control of their own selves. So he's been hearing about devotional service. Now he wants to hear what happens to those who don't take it up. So interestingly, Chamasa Rishi begins his reply by explaining how the divisions of Varnashram are created by God, or they're actually coming directly from the universal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So as often happens, there sometimes seems to be a disconnect between the question and the answer. What does this have to do with anything? The Varnashram. So why is he talking about this? Well, it seems to be because this is human society. He's talking about members of human society. So everyone in human society, actually proper human society, is within the Varnashram. This is the context of the civilization at the time this is being spoken of. So Chamasa Rishi is saying that all of you, basically, or everybody in the world, all human beings, at least those who are within Varnashram, which is the predominant culture of the time, they're all created directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the implication is, because they're created from the Lord, they come from the Lord, their constitutional position is to serve the Lord. That seems to be the idea here. So this is in the translation to today's verse. If any of the members of the four varnas and four ashramas fail to worship or intentionally disrespect the Personality of Godhead, who is the source of their own creation, they will fall down from their position into a hellish state of life. Report by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The words na bhajanti in this verse refer to those who out of ignorance do not worship the Supreme Lord, whereas the word avajananti refers to those who have actually been informed of the supreme position of the Lord, but still show him disrespect. I'm going to comment as I go along here. So they're considered fallen in two ways. These are two words here. Nabhajanti means they don't worship. Now this word bhaja, Srila Prabhupada comments on this, and he actually, in the Bhagavad Gita, last verse of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenantaratmana shuddhavan bhajate yomam samayukta tamo mataha. So the best yogis, leading up to this, it says the best persons are the yogis, and of all the yogis, the best is the devotee. Shuddhavan bhajate yomam. With shraddha, they worship. Shuddhavan bhajate. So Prabhupada comments on this, and in his purport, he leads up to this verse that we're speaking on today. So I just thought I'd read that. We'll see one example of how Srila Prabhupada quotes this verse. Now Prabhupada generally gives it a broader meaning than is here. This is a very technical sense, the way this verse is being used here. You fall from your position in Varnashram. For example, if you're a Brahmana or a Kshatriya and you don't worship God, then you're not a Brahmin or a Kshatriya anymore, which is another point that Prabhupada would often make. He would say there are no Brahmins or Kshatriyas anymore because they're Brahmins or Kshatriyas in name only. They say, oh, I am a Brahmana, but what are you doing? You're not acting like a Brahmana, so you're not really a Brahmana. So that's a fall from Varnashram, but it can be taken more broadly. In fact, Prabhupada would generally use it in a broader sense, that if we don't worship Krishna, then we fall from our constitutional position. Our original constitutional position is to serve the Lord. So in this purport to this verse 647 of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada says, the word bhajate is significant here. Bhajate has its root in the verb bhaj, which is used when there is need of service. Now, by the way, the word bhakti also has, the root of bhakti is also this, bhaj. The English word worship cannot be used in the same way as bhaj. Worship means to adore or to show respect and honor to the worthy one. So when you read that, you think, well, don't we do that to Krishna too? What's the problem here? So then Prabhupada says, but service with love and faith is especially meant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So service, just like people worship a demigod and maybe there's not so much love there. In one sense, there can't be truly bhakti. Prabhupada made this point. And I remember in South India, people speak of Shiva bhakti or Shaiva bhakti. Said there's no such thing because bhakti is only between Bhakta and Bhagavan, and Bhagavan is Krishna, the Supreme Personality. We're part and parcel of Krishna, not Shiva. So the real love is between the soul and God. So this is the idea here. You may worship a demigod to get something, but love and with faith, service with love and faith is especially meant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then there's this, to me, is a quite a memorable one of Prabhupada's classic sentences. One can avoid worshipping a respectable man or a demigod and may be called discourteous, but one cannot avoid serving the Supreme Lord without being thoroughly condemned. Read it again, someone say. One cannot avoid worshipping a respectable man or a demigod and may be called discourteous. You shouldn't do that. It's not nice. But one cannot avoid serving the Supreme Lord without being thoroughly condemned. Every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus every living entity is intended to serve the Supreme Lord by his own constitution. Failing to do this, he falls down. The Bhagavatam 11.5.3 confirms this as follows. Yaesham purusham sakshad atma prabhavam ishwaram vabhajanti avajananti sthanad brashta patantyata. Anyone who does not render service and neglects his duty unto the primeval Lord, who is the source of all living entities, will certainly fall down from his constitutional position. So you see Prabhupada's translation here is slightly different. The BBT devotees translated more literally, as they have a tendency to do. Sometimes they do this, by the way, as I was editing the Bhagavat Sandarbha, and Gopi Pranadan Prabhu, who was a translator and commentator, his preference was to use BBT translations, but what he discovered was often the commentaries often didn't match the BBT translation. So he would have to translate the verse so that the commentary would make sense. That was one of the, because there are different ways. The Sanskrit is sometimes pliable, or you can read it in certain ways, because of the grammar of the sentence, it can be read in different ways, or it can be translated in different ways. So here we see Prabhupada translates it in one way, and the BBT translates it slightly differently, emphasizing more the Varnashram aspect of it. So I'll continue with the purport. And the Bhagavatam purport. So there's these two points. The first is bhajanti. They're speaking of these two words, bhajanti and avajananti. So bhajanti means, let's see, let me just read this again. It leads into the next one. The words na bhajanti in this verse refer to those who out of ignorance do not worship the Supreme Lord. So that's the first thing. Nabhajanti, out of ignorance, this word is important, out of ignorance they don't worship the Supreme Lord. Whereas the word avajananti refers to those who have actually been informed of the supreme position of the Lord, but who still show him disrespect. To me this is interesting because I always think of the word jhana because there are places where jhana seems to have something to do with knowledge and understanding. But in any case, it says here they do understand. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Avajananti ma mudha. So the mudhas disrespect me. This is the same word. So they understand God. This is one class. One class, they don't really, they're not concerned. That's like a lot of people today. They just have no, many people are brought up without any religious background, and they're, the idea of God is just a, not really part of their life. They don't really think of it. They just, well, they're those religious people, but that has nothing to do with me. They don't actually seriously consider whether or not there is a God. They just go on with their lives. So Nabhajanti, they're not going to go to church on Sunday. They'll drive by the church, but they never think of going in. It's not something they think about, really. Whereas there are others who have been informed, and they know better, but they don't do it. Which one would think would be the situation generally in Varnashram? Although that may not be true necessarily either, according to one's family. One could be a Vaishya or a Shudra, for example, do one's work, but not really think about. And there are many, many rules. One can get absorbed in the rules, especially of one's Varna, and then forget about ultimately it's about Krishna. So continuing here, it has already been described that the four spiritual and occupational orders of life are generated from the body of the Lord. In fact, the Supreme Lord is the source of everything, as described in Bhagavad Gita 10.8, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavaha. Those who foolishly do not inquire into the position of the personality of Godhead, as well as those who disrespect the Lord in spite of having heard of his transcendental position, will certainly fall down from the Varnashram Dharma system, as described by the words Sthana Brashtaha. So we have an obligation to inquire about God. The idea is out there, floating around, even in popular culture. So human life means there should be that impulse to inquire. Otherwise, you're not really a human being. You don't feel that urge to see if maybe there's something behind all of this, or someone behind all this, or what are all these people doing? Why are there so many churches and so on? So that impulse should come in human life. So it's a mistake, an offense, actually, not to ignore into God. Just plead ignorance when you're not trying to inform yourself. But to continue, the words patantiyadha indicate that one who falls from the Varnashram system will have no means of avoiding sinful activities. Nor will such a person receive any credit for performing sacrifice, and thus he will gradually sink down into lower and lower species of life in hellish conditions. So we can say, well, that was for that time. If you weren't in Varnashram, then you fell out of Varnashram, then what hope was there? Because that was the system for performing sacrifice and for worshiping God and so on, for living a spiritual life. A religious life, even a religious life, because you're following the Vedas. When I was, Srila Prabhupada often uses the phrase prescribed duties. And I don't know if this has occurred to you, but when I read Bhagavad Gita, I often think so much of this is, to quote, irrelevant. Because it's not really irrelevant, of course. Prabhupada made it relevant to us. But so much of it is in the context of Varnashram. And we don't have Varnashram. So when Prabhupada talks about, or Krishna talks about prescribed duties, he's talking about prescribed duties within Varnashram. When it says, don't perform another's duty, it's very dangerous to do that. So I think, what does that have to do with me? What's my duty and what's somebody else's duty? And what does that really mean? So in Varnashram, it means something. If you're a kshatriya, you shouldn't try to act like a brahmana. First of all, you become trained according to your varna, which generally, and this is part of the reason why Varnashram or the caste system has become to be all about one's birth. So generally, according to your birth, you would take up the family tradition. Kshatriya people with kshatriya spirits tended to be born in kshatriya families and so on, and they were trained from birth to be that. If you're born as the son of a king, then right from the beginning of your life, you're going to be a prince, and you're going to be trained to take over the kingdom someday, so on. So in that sense, one's prescribed duty was very fixed, you might say. There wasn't a lot of social mobility. This would be very politically incorrect to say today. There wasn't a lot, but it tended not to be. Although we do see examples, just like here, we're seeing these Navayogendras, their father was a king, but they're all brahmanas. So it does happen. It's not that there was none of that. It was generally according to one's qualities, but one's birth tended to have a lot to do with it also. So in any case, however you get there, you have your varna, and you're supposed to do it. And because there are so many rules having to do with how you execute your dharma, and you also, you're meant to cultivate certain qualities according to your dharma in the sense of varna and ashram. So here it says that, so within the varnashram system, we have prescribed duties. That's the idea. And if you fall outside antyaja, if you're outside that system, then you don't, there's nothing controlling your life, you might say. Just as people are today, there's nothing really. We have the civil laws, but even laws of morality are very fluid. They get changed. The Supreme Court changes it, tells us it's all right to kill a child within the womb. He says it's such a horrible, every time I think of this, it's amazing. It's so disgusting, isn't it? Even they had this, what's called late term abortion or partial birth abortion. The child is halfway out and alive. And I won't tell you what they do, but they kill the child. It's horrible, just completely horrible. And our people running for political office are in favor of that kind of thing. How could you vote for such a person who doesn't think there's anything wrong with that? It's just so horrible. So in Varnashram culture, Varnashram civilization, there are standards. There's morality and there's ethics and there's standards of human behavior. But just by belonging to that, because the milieu, the age, the times that we live in, and the society, the structure that we live in, have a very strong influence on us. We tend to go with the flow. That's where people are today. People are innocent. Well, they're innocent because, well, they're ignorant. And they're raised in that culture. I get so afraid of children growing up today in this culture. It's so heavy. It's so demoniac, actually. So what can they do? They just carry it along with it. It's there in the educational system. It's there in the entertainment and the media. It's everywhere. It's all pervasive. So they grow up and they have no compass, no moral compass to guide them. It's all whim. It's all about feelings. And this is where we are today. Even we live in this age, of course, is called postmodernism. So one of the aspects of postmodernism is that there's no absolutes. Everything is relative. And it gets to points of complete absurdity. It's like basic philosophical ideas, they don't register with people. People can't think in a logical way, and they're not taught to in school either. They're indoctrinated. Schooling is more about, I don't want to get into the politics of modern America or the modern world, but it's about indoctrination. Of course, education has always been like that in a certain sense. It's about indoctrination to make you a member of the society. That's why we have government schools, because they want you to be a citizen of this country and act in certain ways. But there's so much indoctrination, and there's no teaching about thinking, actual critical thinking. So people get to the point where they just go along with everything and they can't think for themselves, basically. Whatever some idiot entertainer says or sports star or whatever, then they think, well, this is God speaking. This must be the truth because this person I idolize is speaking it. So this is an indication of what happens when you're outside a system that actually supports real spiritual life and real humanity. So that's the idea here, is that when you fall outside Varnashram, then you're in trouble. You don't have any way to really to be guided in life. So this will lead actually to coming up points about being led. Okay, let's see. Now, let's see, we'll continue. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has pointed out that the original cause of offending the Lord and falling down from one's position is one's not learning how to properly worship a bona fide spiritual master. I find this sentence a little vague because I'm not sure if it means falling down from one's position, Varnashram, or falling down from one's constitutional position as a servant of the Lord. In any case, it says you fall down because you haven't learned how to serve a spiritual master. One who is trained to offer respectful obeisances and worship to the bona fide spiritual master automatically offers proper worship to the Supreme Lord. So if you have a guru, then naturally you're going to worship God. We have Prabhupada as our guru, so what is he having us do? Worship Krishna with love and devotion. Without the mercy of a bona fide spiritual master, even a so-called religious man will gradually become atheistic. So this also, you could say, tie this into Varnashram, because religion, you can say broadly speaking, religion means to follow the rules of Varnashram. It's called Varnashram Dharma, the religion of Varnashram. So what does it do? It guides your life, all aspects of your life. But if you don't have a bona fide spiritual master within that system, you can miss the point. So again, without the mercy of a bona fide spiritual master, even a so-called religious man who's doing all the right things, just like many, there are many Indians, for example, they think that the whole point of Bhagavad Gita is to do your duty. In other words, go to work and earn money and support your family and raise your children and that kind of thing. You know, that's your duty. Getting back to this point of prescribed duty, that's usually the way because we say, well, what is my prescribed duty? We don't have Varnashram. So our usual answer is, well, we all have our situation in life, so we have to do that. We have to go to work. And the father goes to work generally and supports the family and so on. And the child, when children ask that question, well, your duty, prescribed duty, is to go to school and educate yourself and so on. So now this isn't spelled out in Shastra. I don't know if Prabhupada ever explained it that way, but we have to come up with some idea. And of course, the other idea of prescribed duty is when you have a guru, then it's very clear. The guru tells you what your prescribed duty is. But that's, in one sense, that's outside. You have a bona fide Vaishnava guru, that's in a transcendental situation. That's not about your material duties in life. Although they can, of course, be the same thing. Did I finish this sentence? Let me read it again. Without the mercy of a bona fide spiritual master, even a so-called religious man will gradually become atheistic, offend the Lord by foolish speculation, and fall into a hellish condition of life. So that's interesting. Three results. If you don't have a bona fide spiritual master, even if you're religious, you can become atheistic, gradually become atheistic, offend the Lord by foolish speculation, and fall into a hellish condition of life. So that means doing all kinds of irreligious things, which are going to bring you a lot of suffering, a lot of pain in the future. Actually, when I was looking up Prabhupada's use of this verse that we're reading today, there's one section in the, I think it's in Perfection of Yoga, that was also printed in the Journey of Self-Discovery, where Prabhupada uses the word pain repeatedly. He talks about the jivas suffering pain in this material world. But he also says he gives the example of the hand and the finger, that leaving our constitutional position is like the finger being separated from the hand. Or when the hand, he said, when the finger has a lot of pain, is giving a lot of pain to the body, sometimes it's amputated. And Prabhupada goes on to say that that's what this material world is. That's the place for all the amputated fingers. Well, that's not what he said, but basically that's the idea. For those who are giving pain to God, they have to stay in this material world. They're separated, cut off from Him, amputated from the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that applies here also when you're in Varnashram, which we, as I said in the beginning, the Varnas and Ashrams are part of the body of the Lord. They're created from the body of the Lord. So they become cut off from that body of the Lord, their connection to the body of the Lord, if they don't worship Him in devotion. So there's a couple more sentences here. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has pointed out that the Purusha mentioned in this verse is Lord Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, who is glorified in the Purusha Supta prayers. Now this particular sentence just seems to be almost like a footnote. It doesn't seem to be exactly connected to the flow of thought here. If one is proud of his high social position and enviously thinks that the Lord is also a creation of nature and that there is no absolute entity who is the origin of all beings, then such a puffed up fool will certainly fall down from the Varnashram system and become just like an unregulated animal. So Prabhupada, of course, had some harsh things to say about those who are proud of their high social position. The leaders, so many places that Prabhupada lambasts the leaders in his books. I was thinking of it during our elections, how Prabhupada, I should have printed a whole spread of what Prabhupada said about leaders in BTG. He didn't have good things to say about them. He said in the light of the Bhagavad, he calls them old fossils that want you to hang on past retirement age, and politicians and so-called leaders. So they are, and of course, Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas are the leaders in that sense. And then the Brahmanas also, so many Brahmanas, of course, in America we don't have the Brahmin caste, but in India it's still there. They tend to be very proud. Oh, I'm a Brahmin. But they're not doing anything Brahminical. So why is that? Because of envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they fall down, and they have fallen down, of course. There are so many Brahmanas. The one Prabhupada says, pulling tela. He is wearing a Brahmin thread, I have seen, he said, and he is pulling tela. Tela means a wagon, like a flatbed wagon. They pull like a donkey's work, that's what. But he's a Brahmin. If you ask him, he'll probably say, I'm a Brahmin. Oh, and they call, yeah, people call him Panditji. People call him Panditji. He's pulling tela, and they call him Panditji because they assume the threat. So that's very fallen from Varnashram, huh? He's supposed to be giving Bhagavatam class instead. Of course, we may do that too, but that's a whole different thing. We do all kinds of work. Vaishnavas, whatever needs to be done, we will do, but that doesn't mean we're Shudras. Shudra means the mentality, complete forgetfulness, that person, most likely. Maybe he's doing a little puja here. They may also do religion. We'll see that also, of course, in India. The man is opening his shop and he's offering incense to all the gods. So it's nice, little religion there, but where's the bhakti? Is there really cultivation of bhakti and brahminical qualities and so on, surrendering one's life to God under the order of the spiritual master? So that's a whole other level of human life. The Varnashram is meant to be the foundation. And then from there, one builds and progresses in spiritual life and worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one more time, I'll read the verse and translation. Yaisham purusham sakshad atma prabhavam ishwaram labhajanti avajananti stanad brashta patantyadaha. If any of the members of the four varnas and four ashramas fail to worship or intentionally disrespect the Personality of Godhead, who is the source of their own creation, they will fall down from their position into a hellish state of life. Any discussion? Yes, Divyanga.
I was on Sangirtan yesterday and I met an Indian girl, and she was, she had American accent, you could tell, but she had a pierced nose. And when I gave her the Bhagavad Gita, she said, the Gita, tell me about this. And she points to Krishna and says, that's Shiva, right?
Yeah.
Immediately I was like, no, that's Krishna. This girl's born a Hindu. But anyway, she was very nice and she gave a donation and took the Gita, but I just thought, come on. It's an example of how far removed, and they're not that far away from India, This is an Indian person. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's Lord Shiva, right?
Who, Jamashanka?
I seem to recall that Varna Sankara means mixed Varna.
Yeah, Sankara means to mix.
So this is our Oshudra Sambhava. In one sense, it seems a lot of people are born that way, I guess, but there does seem to mix. And so that makes it difficult to figure out, what should I be doing in my life? But you're making a point how when a comes to prescribe duties, well, what's that got to do with me? But in one sense, there isn't. It does appear that many devotees establish an ad hoc varna. You know, they figure out, well, this is what, you know, Krishna kind of reveals, this is what you should be doing. And they do it. They kind of put their life into it. Like you've been, what your services seems to fit your nature. And I think that's the case with many devotees. Right? I mean,
some people will say, well, what's the point of varnashram when everybody's already doing things according to their nature? So the point is that there's training. You have a nature, and then there's training. Now, what exactly that training is, that's where, you know, we're trying to figure out varnashram for so many years. And I was saying, I don't want to bring up that side of things because that's a tough one. You know? Prabhupada wanted varnashram college, so what do you teach kshatriyas? What do you teach vice? Well, you teach them how to farm, I suppose. But anyway, it's very difficult. So that's the idea. Yeah, it's true that people tend to do things that suits them. But also we find that today, as Prabhupada said, there are no Brahmins. There may be people who are intellectuals and have certain Brahminical qualities, but because they're not trained as Brahmins, that's the problem, even though they had the propensity.
In a room conversation in Hyderabad, I think it was in 75, Prabhupada was having a conversation with a government official, and he said, every temple should be an educational center where Brahmins are trained, and then they train others.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his concept. And you look at the temples that are kind of bright spots in the ISKCON world, like Chopadi or Pune, now Calcutta, that's what they've done. They have very enthusiastic training programs for the devotees when they come in.
Yeah, exactly how they're trained and what, it seems like it takes some creative thinking. It's not necessarily spelled out clearly.
Well, they do. Prabhupada did establish Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Vedanta.
No, but I'm talking about Varnas, for example. The Brahmins are supposed to teach Kshatriyas how to be Kshatriyas and Vaishyas how to be Vaishyas and Shudras how to be Shudras.
Well, that's what the Krishna Institute's working on.
Krishna has to do the intelligence, how to do that exactly. Something else? Devikam Prabhu?
Sodi Avajananti. He knows Krishna is God, but he's disrespectful to him. But also you have another group that knows Krishna is God, but neglects him. And that group falls within the category of Avajananti also.
Well, that's what it says here. The word Avajananti refers to those who have actually been informed of the supreme position of the Lord, but still show him disrespect. Well, you're saying neglect is rather than disrespect.
Well, no, show disrespect. That's some. But then some would, like for example, especially like a lot of Hindus, know Krishna is God, but they neglect. You know?
I would say that neglect is a form of disrespect.
Disrespect.
It's like if you're supposed to bow to someone, the spiritual master walks in the room and you neglect. That's what Indra did with Brihaspati, and we saw what happened to him. Sita Di Prabhu.
In defense of post-modernity, because no one else will do it. In one sense, mundane ethics, it's all relative. There's no absolutes and conditional.
So that's the absolute position, that it's all relative.
Yeah, not in absolute defense of post-modernity. There's some points to play with. It's not like previous to post-modernity, everybody was, focusing on issues we would consider absolute, like, the jivans, relationship with the supreme, devotion and stuff. They did put some pretty crazy stuff before him.
You said that Brahmins should create kshatriyas. But is it possible in the Kali Yuga that Brahmins create kshatriyas? Could we have leaders, temple president with a sword, who leads
Well, yeah, that's a question. What do we do? What do we do with Kshatriyas exactly? How do we train them? I don't know, give them an AK-47 and send them to the range. What does it mean? And do it, you know, to me, a big question, did Prabhupada want ISKCON to be run on the model of a Varnashram institution? Did he want us to have those designations? And then again, how do you train? And it seems that when I first thought about this, I was thinking when I saw this verse today, I thought, oh boy, Varnashram. And I thought, it seems like an impossibility to institute Varnashram because you have to have control of the whole society because it's a society-wide. It's a way to organize society. Throughout history, different thinkers have come up with ideas of how to organize society. So this is the Vedic idea of how you organize society. But we don't have control over society. So it seems like what, you know, ISKCON's idea is, and Prabhupada said, set up villages. So the idea is you have Varnashram villages. So and in that village, well, what's a kshatriya going to do exactly? Stand guard at the gate? Yeah, they're administrators, but you know, how many of those do you need? And then again, you know, I suppose we have this ISKCON leadership course, so they get trained in that way. Then the Vaishyas, seems like the Vaishyas are, you know, in a little village, the Vaishyas were, you know, doing all the farming kinds of things and maybe some trade, selling to people outside and so on. So we can have our little model, and that's the idea, I suppose, but it's not really a very robust Varnashram system. It's sort of like playing house or something.
Well, in one sense, I mean, ISKCON is supposed to be a rabbinical institution. I mean, Brahmins don't control society, you know, like you know, Kshatriya wannabes.
Yeah, well, that's the point. I mean, Prabhupada originally, yeah. he wanted to train us as Brahmins, but then towards the end, he was emphasizing Varnashram because he was seeing that not everybody is a Brahmana. So we have to engage people in other ways. I mean, another way to look at Varnashram is whatever your duty is, connected to Krishna. People, just like, you know, we have the village model, but what about everybody outside the village? You know, if you're a computer programmer, what's your varna? If you're checkout at Publix, what's your varna? So many, there's thousands and thousands of different occupations. How do you identify what varna that fits into? That tends to be a little bit of a challenge, I think.
Yeah, that's the thing, is the Brahmins figure it out, right? And you know, disseminate knowledge, but they're not, as far as the larger society, you know, playing the role. Like Prabhupada said, you know, when the Supreme Court justices had Tilak, that's a kind of almost brahminical function in government where they judge cases.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't talking about, oh, when the president and the general, you know, have Tilak, then it will be a success. So, you know, it's a lot to explore.
Anything else?
Well, it mentions how the different barns and ashrams are established according to the modes of nature. And in the modes of nature, there's a progression. They generally consider passion better than ignorance and goodness better than passion. So that just like we had the pastime with the story about a kshatriya who wanted to become a Brahmin because he was defeated by a Brahmin. What's his name?
Vishwamitra.
Vishwamitra. So there you see one of the evolutionary criteria that he tried, but he didn't do it correctly until he developed one quality, and then that quality promoted him from passion into the goodness. Remember what it was? He had to get it right. He was having some problems with his anger and different issues. And it said when he developed forgiveness, then he was able to go to the next level. So there's a progression in the modes of nature. So if you don't progress in your Varnashram, it was also considered that you didn't successfully use your opportunity in any form of life to progress in your Varnas and Ashrams. So it's actually there.
And this topic raises so many questions. I mean, for example, if you're a Shudra, but you're doing Vaishnav things, hearing and chanting, then you should be developing more in the mode of goodness. Does that mean you're going to become a Brahmana?
You're already
but a Brahmana. Still, there are certain... Yeah, you're already a Brahmana in a sense, but still, you still may have the propensity to do physical work rather than sit and read books all day long. So that doesn't seem to disappear. even though one develops, you know, knowledge of Brahman Vaishnava. So there are certain proud of the karmas, I guess they are, that, you know, that aren't going to change in your life.
But don't they call that Daivi Varnashram then? Because they're showing that whatever that Roshi Yatkinasi, you can do it for Krishna, which was kind of like the theme in Varnashram, is to connect with the Krishna and do it for Krishna.
It seems to me Varnashram is Daivi Varnashram by definition. And maybe Bhaktivinoda Thakur added that word because it was degraded. So remind people that Varnashram is Daivi Varnashram. That's what this whole verse is about today. If you take the Deva out, then it's not Daivi Varnashram. It's not really Varnashram anymore. It's Chaitya Guru.
I hear that all the time. It's in the Nectar of Devotion. I hear the narrations from the Mahabharata. Sometimes I don't have too much time to read, but this one, probably that's the only place. It's like Prabhupada says, if everybody engaged his own activities in the modern society, not telling them to Krishna consciousness, then maybe you're going to remember, isn't that kind of devotion? So then we don't have to worry about all this, getting all this designation ourselves, and then that's going to solve all the problem. He says that.
Yeah.
It's just like giving a break, like, okay, you cannot do it, just do this.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Maybe there's not necessarily one way of looking at it. In other words, we do want to have our Varnashram communities, but we also want to engage people who are in their occupation out there in the world, and we can, in one sense, also call that Varnashram.
Yeah, he said, then that's going to solve all the problems, and then we don't have to designate ourselves. Yeah. Okay, that's just like, okay, you cannot do it, just do this. And then another thing that I want to say is, oh yeah, it's a Kali Yuga especially. I mean, this Kali Yuga is a mess. I don't remember the whole idea, but that there's going to be only one Varna, like Hari Bhaktas, Hari something, and everybody's going to chant Hare Krishna, like a prediction for Kali Yuga. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, in Satya Yuga it says there was only one Varna, everybody was Hansa.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's what Satya Yuga, I know, but there is one for Kali Yuga. It's not exactly a prediction, but what it says is that everybody's going to be a devotee and chant the holy name. Is going to be, you know what I'm talking about?
No, I'm not sure. But I understand the idea that if everyone's chanting Hare Krishna and everyone's a Vaishnava, then it doesn't really matter so much.
Yeah, it's going to be like everybody's going to be Hari. At least a verse for that. Everybody's going to be like Hari Bhakta or something like that. Something like that. Anyway, it was just a little comment.
Thank you. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.